From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, Ancient Astronauts. Here's what's happening. Boy, the Weather Channel's broadcast was briefly interrupted today after what it said was a malicious software attack on the network. Shut it down for a little bit. The network said it was experiencing technical difficulties before they finally realized they were under attack. Who would want to shut down the Weather Channel? But they did. Maybe it's a test. Special Counsel Robert Mueller's report was released in the Washington's political world Thursday, showing investigators did not find evidence of collusion between the 2016 Trump campaign and Moscow, as Attorney General William Barr declared last month, but outlying an array of controversial incidents involving the president that were examined as part of the investigation's obstruction inquiry. This included President Trump apparently telling his White House counsel in June of 2017 to inform the acting attorney general that Mueller had conflicts of interest and must be removed. The report said Trump also fumed over the original appointment, lamenting that it might mean the end of his presidency, first telling then the Department of Justice leader Jeff Sessions he should resign, and later trying to get Sessions to take back control of the probe. We've got two views for you, and also I want to let you know that the Mueller report that came out contained 855 separate redactions, the bulk of which appear in this section devoted to the Russian government's actions to influence the 2016 election for the benefit of Donald Trump. Now, we have two views for you. First of all, Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. Well, it didn't show much, did it, John?
No, of course not. And not only that, but think logically about this, okay? Because the law is about logic. How do you have an obstruction case about a collusion case that doesn't exist? So you're asking people to say that, well, we must prosecute Trump for obstructing the crime that was committed. He tried to cover up a crime of collusion that never happened. So the whole obstruction case is completely bogus. It's another political attempt by the Dems in advance of the 2020 election. They had all hoped that they could get Trump convicted of collusion and obstruction of justice. It didn't happen. So they want to keep this going in order to bloody him as much as possible. And when you think about the fact that 23 prosecutors spent nearly 2 years in the most intense possible
and $40 million.
$40 million later, and they came up with nothing other than an opportunity now. And remember that Trump basically did not use executive privilege. He said, go ahead and put the report out there. And guess what's happening now? The Dems are cherry picking every word, taking everything out of context and essentially saying the trier of fact, which was Robert Mueller and his investigators and the Department of Justice, is unacceptable. We now must put this back into the hands of Adam Schiff and Gerald Nadler and Elijah Cummings and all the rest of them in the very partisan House of Representatives to keep this controversy alive as long as possible.
It's not there, John.
And I think that eventually this is going to boomerang on the Dems, and frankly, I think it's going to go away.
John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. And now let's get the views of Howard Bloom, who leans left, but it's important to get a balanced perspective. Go ahead, Howard.
Well, John Curtis is very wrong, as usual, in my opinion. There is a viciously partisan tussle over what was released today, and a massive question. But before we get to the question, here are today's events. Thanks to the redacted report, Democrats and Republicans are both declaring victory. Republicans are triumphant because the Mueller report says that there was no conspiracy and no coordination between the Trump team and the Russians. Now, yes, the Mueller report says that the Russians played an enormous role in electing Donald Trump. Yes, the Mueller report says the Russians reached out over and over again to the Trump team, but with roughly 8 exceptions, the Trump team did not reach back. What's more, the Mueller report says that the Russians provided Trump's most important campaign weapon, Hillary Clinton and John Podesta's emails. And yes, most disturbing of all, the Mueller report says that the Russians successfully recruited pro-Trump groups like the Tea Party. to mount demonstrations at the Russians' direction, but the Mueller report says that these pro-Trump dupes of the Kremlin are innocent because they had no idea that the people guiding them were Russians. What's more, the redacted Mueller report, with its 855 redactions that you pointed out, says that a conspiracy takes an overt agreement between the Russian government and the Trump campaign on election interference. The highly successful parallel efforts of the Trump team and the Russians never rose to this legal standard. As for collusion, says the Mueller report, that is not a legal term. The Mueller team says that collusion is not something that it investigated. Nonetheless, Republicans like John Curtis say that collusion is not something, or it's, nonetheless, they're repeating the president's mantra that there was no collusion. More important, Republicans are saying that the Mueller investigation was a witch hunt. To use the word Attorney General William Barr employed in a 19-page June memo, Republicans are saying that the Mueller probe was bogus. Some Republicans, led by the president, have concluded that now it's time to investigate the people who started this attempt at a coup, this so-called phony conspiracy to toss Donald Trump out of power. Now, who are the plotters Trump supporters want to lock up? Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, James Comey, James Clapper, Bruce McCabe, and half a dozen more. But the Democrats have a different take. The Mueller report shows that Donald Trump was horrified that the American public might think that he won his election with help from the Russians. The president did everything in his power to stop the Russian investigation. He tried to get his aides to fire Mueller over and over again, aides from Jeff Sessions to White House Attorney Don McGahn. None of these members of the Trump team were willing to carry out Trump's orders. More important, the Mueller report shows that Donald Trump has a habit of conspiring with his team to lie to the American public over and over again. According to MSNBC, this means that Donald Trump may be unfit for the first job of the president to uphold and defend the Constitution. But the most important question raised by the Mueller report is this. The Mueller report shows a highly successful sabotage of the American electoral process, a sabotage engineered by the Russians, a Russian act of cyber war. Donald Trump tried to stop Mueller's investigation of this Russian attack over and over again. In other words, our president, our commander-in-chief, opened us up to even more successful Russian assaults in the future. And these electrical manipulations don't just hit us. They've hit England, France, Germany, Austria, Italy, and even Israel. These manipulations are designed to tear apart the most successful peacekeeping alliance in modern history, NATO and the free world. So the big question on the Democratic side will be this. Is Trump's obstruction, his attempt to keep us from investigating this Kremlin skullduggery, a high crime and misdemeanor? Is it treason?
It will probably die right where it is right now, Howard, and then eventually go away. But there you have it, two distinct different views on a subject that has divided the country right down the middle. Even small amounts of red and processed meat, such as bacon, can increase the risk of bowel cancer, according to the research. The latest study, led by Oxford University and funded by the Cancer Research Group of the UK, says that eating red meat can be harmful. Just be careful, folks. A man with fangs in his mouth and eyes like a demon has been arrested over the murder of a popular tattoo artist found with bite marks on her neck. She was found dead in her blood-soaked apartment in the Ukraine with stab wounds and bites all over the place. What else is going on in the skies these days? Let's check in with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Hi, Peter. What do you have for us?
Well, good evening, George. I hear all these political debates, and some days I regret ever having gotten involved with ufology. But, boy, I'm relieved that I'm not in the political field, for heaven's sake.
That's why we like your UFO reports.
Bunch of really intriguing reports. We just updated our website tonight with about 107 new reports collected over the last 6 days, and among them are the following. The first four are very similar, and they're a type of report that I have reported on Coast in years and months in the past. They involve tiny little objects seen in the daytime sky. First report I received last week comes from the 10th of April, Wednesday, I believe that was, of last week, two sightings, one from Apache Junction and one from Mesa, out east of Phoenix. People reported a tiny little speck of highly reflective substance, whatever it was, high in the eastern sky. And interestingly, even though there's a considerable distance between Apache Junction and Mesa, both parties reported about the same angle of elevation. That suggests to me that the object was very high. A similar report 4 days later from Los Angeles, a gentleman reported seeing a highly reflective object in the daytime sky. This was 11 a.m. He had no idea what it was. He looked at it with binoculars and still couldn't determine what it was. And the next day, the 15th, tax day, a very similar sighting from San Diego. In this case, a gentleman got very good photos, and I'll be posting them to the website. Looks something like a toilet seat or a ring-like balloon. Have no idea what it was, but I'll throw it up on the website, and maybe people who visit our website will be able to identify it. Next sighting comes from Frisco, Texas. Also on the 15th, Monday of this week, gentlemen report seeing a white phalanx or chevron-shaped object. At first he thought it was a B-2 bomber, but he's very familiar with military aircraft. He says it wasn't anywhere close to that. And the interesting thing about this object was it was brilliantly white. It was not black or dark like the B-2. And later that same date, Monday night, 8:44 p.m., Aurora, Colorado, a husband and wife saw something very similar. They saw a chevron with four lights down both arms or both wings of the chevron. It streaked overhead. They saw it for less than 10 seconds, they estimate. And I'm going to streak ahead here, George, to my final report, perhaps one of the most interesting ones I have tonight. It involves, comes from Malacca, Minnesota, this morning, 9 a.m. A gentleman heard a very prominent, very distinct rumbling sound that passed overhead, not particularly quickly. He heard it for 6 minutes, he estimates. He said it sounded like a large rocket taking off with the popping sound that's characteristic of that type of launch. Anyway, UFOs are up to their old habits, and that's my report, and I'll see you next week.
You got it. Thank you. Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. As you know, for several years now, we have been reporting on the possibility of a solar flare from the sun or an EMP attack that could take down our power grid. We're not giving up. In a moment, Peter Pry, one of three guests, join us as we talk about what we're going to do to protect our power grid. Next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Last month, President Trump signed an executive order directing federal agencies to identify the threats posed by potential electromagnetic pulses. That could be a nuke detonated in the atmosphere or a large solar flare from the sun, which are believed to be potentially dangerous to critical infrastructure like our electrical grid, and find ways to guard against them. And, of course, Peter Pry has been with us for years. He's the executive director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security, a congressional advisory board dedicated to achieving protection of the United States from the EMP attack, cyber attack, mass destruction, terrorism, and other threats to infrastructure. Peter, welcome to the program. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much for having me.
Are you and your organization part of this executive order to help identify these threats?
Well, the EMP task force has been involved in advising the National Security Council on this, but more importantly, when I was in my role as chief of staff of the Congressional EMP Commission, the executive order is basically implementing the core recommendations of the commission, of which I was chief of staff, and using that as a blueprint. And it's very ambitious. A lot of the press has gotten kind of wrong what the executive order is about. It's not another study. This executive order, the studies that are being done in connection with this executive order are for the purpose of getting the country protected. The first paragraph of the executive order says it is the policy of the United States to protect our not just our electric grids now, but all the critical infrastructures. Mm-hmm. From man-made and electromagnetic and nuclear electromagnetic pulses. So the decision has been made, you know, the long war over whether we're going to protect ourselves or not from this has been decided in favor of the recommendations of the EMP Commission, and the blueprint basically that was laid out by the EMP Commission for getting the country protected is being followed in this executive order.
Peter, is this executive order something that you and I have been wanting to have done for so many years?
Absolutely. I was the first person ever to write a executive order on EMP. I wrote a draft executive order on EMP in 2008 for the EMP commission that was submitted to the Bush administration. You know, but it was too late in the Bush administration. That was back in 2008 when their administration was just closing. That executive order was offered to the Obama administration for the 8 years of the Obama administration, and he never signed it. Now that executive order has been improved and expanded and refined, and the executive order that has been signed now basically encapsulates all of those issues and goes beyond what was in the additional 2008 executive order. So this is very good news from the perspective of trying to get the country protected. It's an excellent first step in the direction of achieving national EMP preparedness, but we're by no means out of the wood yet. You know, the deep state bureaucracy that has been dragging its feet for many years is going to oppose the White House and try to stop this, maybe until a new president comes in, so to continue to do nothing. And of course, you've got the utilities. I say that, you know, one can make an argument that that the electric power industry, for example, has 145 million reasons why we shouldn't protect the critical infrastructures, especially the electric grid from EMP. The 145 million reasons are, well, they spend $145 million every year on lobbyists and making campaign contributions to members of Congress and the Senate to try to influence them to basically let them off the hook on things like EMP protection, cyber protection, even tree branch protection. So we're winning the war. The people who have been opposed to doing anything about this and making EMP a low priority are in their last ditch, but we haven't won yet, and it's going to be, you know, this is the last and most important struggle. Will the White House be able to get this EMP executive order actually implemented? And we should know how much progress we're making in the next year, because one of the great things about the executive order too is that it's giving this very high priority. Mm-hmm. It's putting out at a very fast track. There are actual things that the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Energy, the Department of Defense have to do, like within 90 days, then in 180 days, and then within 1 year. By the end of 1 year from the time that the order was signed on March 26th, the White House will be in a position with if the federal bureaucracy does its job and follows the timeline, within 1 year, we will already have significant EMP protection built on, because one of the provisions is that before the year lapses, within 180 days, the Department of Homeland Security has to include EMP in its national planning scenarios for protecting the country against various kinds of catastrophes. So right off the bat, in 180 days, we're going to start getting significant protection if DHS does its job. And then at the end of the year, by the 26th of March next year, there'll be a whole bunch of things, a list of the technologies that can be applied to protecting the electric grid and other critical infrastructures, regulatory mechanisms that can be utilized, and other factors that go into protecting a nation against EMP. And that will put us in a position so that within a couple of years we could achieve national EMP preparedness to the level that the EMP Commission wanted. So we'd basically have excellent protection of the nation if the White House can compel a resistant federal bureaucracy to do its job
and pull this off. Are you excited about the possibilities that we're going to get this done?
Yes, I am. I mean, we've been winning the war so far. This was a tremendous loss, the fact that this executive order. This is the thing that the deep state bureaucracy and the electric utility lobbies have been trying to prevent. It's been a David versus Goliath struggle. You know, I and a few other people you're going to have on the show later. I mean, you know, there's a handful of organizations that have virtually no resources, you know. All we've got on our side are the facts. And we're up against this Goliath that's got, well, just in the case of the electric power industry, as I said, $145 million to spend propagandizing against us. They control whole think tanks like the Electric Power Research Institute and the Edison Electric Institute that are willing to put out bogus studies.
Well, we're not going to give up, Peter. With people like you, we're going to keep pushing and pushing and pushing. Dr. Peter Pry, a regular guest here on Coast to Coast, pushing to protect our power grid. Thank you, Peter. More to come on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Let me introduce Glenn Rhodes now, the National Operations Director for the EMP Task Force on National and Homeland Security. He has an MBA degree with an emphasis on aerospace management. He is also an expert in grassroots social activism and currently advocating for grid resiliency with Peter Pry, whom you've just heard. He's a founder of the Colorado Nanotech Initiative. Glenn spent 30 years at Martin Marietta, Lockheed Martin, Home Depot, Best Buy, Lowe's, Jefferson County Government, and state initiatives in various positions as well. Glenn will be with us next hour as well to take your phone calls about EMPs and solar flares. And he was with me back in October of 2017 where we were talking about this. And Glenn, I've got to tell you, I cannot think of a more important subject than protecting our power grid.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. George, this is the most important thing that we could ever do. It concerns our national security. And by the way, back in April 25th of 2016, the GOA published a report that concluded that DHS, Department of Homeland Security, the DOD, in conjunction with the industry, have not established a coordinated approach to identifying and implementing key risk management activities to address EMP threats. So this government and the White House executive order, like Peter was saying before, by the way, Peter, it amazes me how this guy travels around. You know, he's up in Toronto, Canada. He's going to be driving back. We got to pray for Peter's safety because it's a long road back to the U.S. But the guy is just a workhorse, and he's just really helping the country. And we just don't give him enough credit, I think, to the enormous tasks that he's doing to advocate for grid resiliency. But I think that the Peter underlined the fact that the executive order, George, I think one of the most important things that happened, and we had a space weather conference here a couple of weeks ago here in Boulder. One of the most important things I saw that happened was that Bill Murtaugh, who was addressing the people in the InfoGuard SIG, he talked about how the fact that this is the first time that we put the space weather factor with the nuclear hemp high altitude factor.
Yeah.
Because up until that point, as you know, George, because our government is so compartmentalized, you know, the scientists, the space weather guys, were kind of focusing in on how to get early warning for coronal mass ejections to make sure that we, you know, get adequate notification to airlines and to power companies that hopefully we could power down the grid in order to withstand an approach. But they weren't allowed to talk or very little allowed to communicate with the scientists that were working the DOD stuff. So this executive order, it ties in both groups to bring them together, which is really monumental. And I feel that it's going to be a very positive thing for the country to take the next step.
Yeah, Glenn, I took four of my six grandchildren out to dinner tonight. And one of them, she's 19 years old, said, Papa, what's the show on tonight? And I told her about this. And, yeah. And you want to do it where you don't scare, because one of them 7 years old.
Oh, yeah.
And you don't want to scare the living daylights out of them. But you look at them and you go, this is why we do what we do.
Yes, that's exactly right. And Peter, he has so much information on the bad stuff that can happen. When we got together, Peter and I, we just said, you know, Peter, you continue to talk to people about, because you need to tell people about how horrible the consequences are. Allow me to try to get maybe a more positive spin. And I think everybody, including Peter, really realizes that we can solve this. We don't have to stick our head in the sand and say, oh my gosh, the thing is just totally out of control. George, we can put a positive spin on young people that are growing up. It's just a matter of, you know, sticking with it, making sure that the scientists start talking to the engineers, because one of the things that one of the engineers that actually mentors me, he just said, Glenn, the amazing thing is that we have to get to the point where the scientist can now start extrapolating data to the engineers, where now we can start saying, hey, where do we take the theories of the electromagnetic spectrum and now translate it to how engineers can protect the grid? And we're kind of at that point right now, in that juncture. We have to be able to, in the words of a lot of engineers that I talk to, we have to be able to test to failure. Because as you know, you can put a lot of stuff and a lot of theories in science and everything, even when we go on space exploratory missions to say, hey, this is going to happen. But until we actually test some of these theories and actually apply physics to them and apply physical and kinetic factors to these things, we'll never really know. And that's what's really hindering us, because when's the last time we ever had a nuclear EMP go off? You know, I mean, we're able to extrapolate some data from the coronal mass ejections in South Africa and how they've burned up transformers. But the problem that we have, and the problem that I have in educating people, is engineers will tell us, well, Glenn, those electrical transformers will survive. And I said, you can't say that, because guess what? We've never really tested a 300 or 400 ton transformer under an E1 and the various examples and various yields of what an E1 could do to a transformer, because, you know, how many people have a 300 or 400 ton transformer to blow up? But we have to get to that point where we're going to be able to physically test to failure different components and systems. And like I was telling you before, you know, when we're here in Colorado, when I go out and advocate for grid resiliency, people always say, hey, Glenn, will a solar panel work? Will a solar panel system work? And we almost had some daylight where we had a government program where we're going to test some solar panels down at Jackson Engineering in Colorado Springs, and all of a sudden they pulled the rug out from under us and we couldn't do that. And so I have to say, with all honesty, we have never had a government program to see how resilient, you know, solar panel systems are, because we've never crossed that threshold, and we have to do that. Now, there's some companies like Solark, which is a solar company that has gotten some data that says that we can do that. But, George, we have snake oil salesmen coming out of woodwork. I get people all the time saying, hey, this thing will work. And then I send it to Arthur Bradley, who's up at Langley. He's a scientist up there. And he said, Glenn, you just sold me a box of sand.
It doesn't work.
I pulled that thing open. There's nothing there. So, George, we just have to continue to be perseverant.
Absolutely. Glenn, we're going to call you back at the top of the hour. You're going to take phone calls with us, so you stand by for that, and we will do that. Our very special guest, Glenn Rhodes, will take calls with you next hour. Now, let me introduce you to Tommy Waller, Vice President for Special Projects at the Center for Security Policy. Tommy comes to the center with more than 16 years as an infantry officer, expeditionary ground reconnaissance officer in the Marine Corps, and service spanning multiple deployments in Afghanistan, Iraq, Africa, and South America. His formal education includes numerous military schools and colleges, a bachelor's degree in international relations from Tulane University, and executive education and high-stakes negotiation from the Wharton School of Business. Tommy, thank you for serving, by the way. I really appreciate what you've done for our country.
George, I appreciate it. You know, it reminds me, folks often thank me for my service. And, you know, what I want to do is just illustrate for your listeners the value of the service of those that keep the lights on. You know, I had to testify I had to testify before the Texas Senate this month on this topic, and I mentioned that, you know, the folks that work in the electric industry that are actually motivated to protect that industry against all hazards, including EMP, do more than I will ever do in uniform for the American people. And I think that's probably what you were feeling when you were with your family members at dinner and you were looking at your grandkids and thinking about the prospect of losing that grid. The service provided by those who can keep it going is immense.
Absolutely. Tommy, how did you get involved in this?
Well, sir, my civilian job is with the Center for Security Policy, as you mentioned. And one of the efforts that the Center for Security Policy has had over the past decade is to reinforce the work that national heroes like Dr. Peter Pry have been doing to secure our nation's grid against all hazards. And so my boss, Frank Gaffney, began what's known as the Secure the Grid Coalition back in 2010, just as a sponsor. Our organization sponsors this broad coalition of national security experts. Of course, Dr. Pry is one of the key, most senior leaders of that coalition. And so it's my job to go around the country and to educate people about this important topic, really a topic that I was not educated on as a member of the military. You know, the time that I spent on active duty, you know, the subject of EMP was not one that was brought to my attention. And so it's been my privilege to go all around the country and to start working on getting the next generation educated on this immensely important topic and mobilized to address it.
Well, you know, I began to learn about this from F. Michael Maloof and William Forstchen. Those two individuals are heroes, as far as I'm concerned, for coming to the forefront with their research and their books on the powers and the dangers of EMP or solar flares. And, you know, prior to that, Tommy, you know, I wasn't into it as much as I am now. Now I'm obsessed with trying to get the grid fixed. I'm doing what I can media-wise, what you folks are doing politically to get this done.
Well, George, what you're doing is of immense value. I mean, Americans need to hear about this, and terms like EMP need to become more of a, you know, a household term and less of a, you know, hey, well, you're a tinfoil hat person or you're a, quote, apocalyptic prepper. You know, the more people we can have in media that are speaking the truth about this, the better. So we thank you for that, sir.
What took presidents so long to do what finally President Donald Trump did? And that was sign his order to say, let's think about getting this done, folks.
You know, sir, I think that President Trump is a hero for addressing this. This is a big problem. This is not an easy problem to fix. And that's something that the president, you know, he refuses to kick the can down the road. I remember back in May 2015, then candidate Trump, we had the opportunity to brief him on this. And Dr. Pry was the primary briefer for candidate Trump. We took the opportunity to educate as many presidential candidates as would listen to the you know, most important national security topics that we considered a candidate ought to be aware of. And this, of course, is one of them. And Dr. Pry briefed candidate Trump about this, and he committed, you know, to addressing it. And this is a man who keeps his promises, you know, and so I think it just took a go-getter to be in a spot to go after this really, really tough problem. So as Dr. Pry mentioned, I pray that the people in government will work hard to do their jobs to begin actually securing this grid. There are many civil servants in government that want to do the right thing. And so this executive order now gives them top cover so that they can do it.
Did all the candidates at the time seem willing to listen about this?
Many of them did. You know, we briefed Dr. Ben Carson, and he immediately was seized with it. Dr. Carson still is, you know, very concerned about this topic. So at least the candidates that were involved in our national security action summits, we did four of them before the election, really just as an educational opportunity for candidates and for all the people who are going to be voting for our next president. You know, and I would say that they were open to this. But, you know, there were times when I was kind of scratching my head. You know, nothing against Jeb Bush, but I remember, you know, he didn't participate in our summits, but I remember having one of our coalition members at a town hall event asked a question about EMP, you know, and Mr. Bush mentioned, well, you know, I hadn't heard of this until just recently. And I'm thinking to myself, this is the brother of the former president of the United States of America. How has he never heard of EMP?
Well, and a former governor of a state.
Of a state, right. Right, exactly. And so this is the thing that our coalition is working so hard to do, is to bring this very real topic to the people who need to know it, which predominantly is the American people. And, of course, their policymakers that they elect.
My concern, Tommy, is that something happens before we get the grid protected, whether it's a solar flare from the sun, which we have no control over, or some rogue government does something stupid. I mean, I still don't know if we can trust North Korea because they're still testing missiles and everything else. I haven't seen any change yet from even the several summits that we've had with them.
Yes or no, I think it's a valid concern, the concern of mine as well. Particularly every time I look at my four children and I think about, you know, how fast can we move this? And I think, you know, we need to be prudent. Americans need to be prepared to live without electricity. The longer that any of us can live without electricity, the better chance we have to restoring a downed grid. And so there are states in which we're working where we have people in the National Guard, in the state governments that are working to address this. We are then connecting them with people in the federal government to pass on those lessons learned. One of the states that we're working in, you know, there's four lines of operation: protecting the grid, restoring a down grid, consequence management, and continuity of government. And so, you know, as you look at all those aspects, the consequence management one is a very difficult one. And the more resilient American families can be, the more we can manage those consequences. So I think, you know, all of us ought to be as prudent and prepared as we can be. At the same time, you know, I remember Dr. Pry telling me one day, and I was talking to him about this, about my own family's, you know, preparations for this. And he said, Tommy, you know, this sort of topic makes you want to run to the frontier.
Oh, yeah, it sure does. You know, it sure does. Tommy, we're out of time for you, but I want to thank you. We've got websites all linked up for you. Glenn Rhodes and Peter Pry. Up next, Glenn Rhodes comes back to take your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM.